part of my drawings are on tile, so part of the drawings are on.
And that's the road construction, where something that died, and that was still open to pull out the drawings. When you made your drawings, would you use materials to do that?
Well, I finally got some pencils, and they used to bring, they broke up the customs office in Manila, and they brought these customs sheets in, and on the back of them was plain paper. There was three different, on the front of it was pictures of Chinese and people who come in and when I do that, and all the information on it.
Now, when you first started to draw, you said you were in Billabed. What was the, what kind of subject matter did you draw?
I used to draw horses and cowboys, but my ranch horse. And I finally got to draw a few of them. So some of the people said, well, why don't you draw some of this stuff, you know? And all I said, well, I can't draw some without it taking me out and cut my head off. You know, because it was dangerous to draw some of that. Before even the artists come out of there. But I did draw some of the things, and I gave them to this Father Duffy. And he put them in the bottom of his mask yet. Some of them were up in the top of the image.
How many drawings?
I probably have 50. I do a draw every day. It's working, they let cows drill. It's down easy to watch for them.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, they go ahead. And they do, I could. Well, they let them learn to stop it.
Huh.
Yeah, it is.
So what happened to the drives that probably don't need?
Well, they went down on the ship. They went on the ship for the sun.
I don't know about the lower class, but I think they called the Oriole Company.
He was one of 160 out of 1600 they got off of.
Sure. Yeah.
But
they got them
in Chinese. But he survived that.
They sunk them twice. They sunk the boat, and then they got another one, went on, to, and they were sunk north of Taiwan on the next ship, and then they got off of that one and got it.
When you were taken to Japan, what was that like?
Well, we went on what they call a Canadian Advantage, which was a whole Canadian ship purchased from Canadians before the war. Kind of an old tug. And there were 1,100 of us aboard. And we were 62 days aboard the ship. We went out and anchored Manila Bay for 2 weeks before we sailed. And we sailed in a typhoon.
And where were you? Down in the hold of the ship?
Yeah, down the hold of the ship.
2 months,
more than 2 months.
Huh?
More than 2 months.
Yeah.
You can imagine that. We were so filthy.
Did you know you were going through a typhoon?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know it all. Oh, man, I'll tell you, that's something else. We were right through the eye. And it's probably saved our life. So they were blockading the Philippines at that time. And the ship before us was sunk and the ship after. But we had a few Japanese civilians aboard and everything, so they were trying to get through. But when we got off that ship, we were in that.
Would the Americans or the Allies have any way of knowing that there were American POWs on the ship?
They were on my ship. And they wouldn't have sunk them. They didn't have sunk by airplanes and off carriers and submarines.
Why did they leave them unmarked? Did they have a better chance of getting through if they were marked?
Well, sure, they could have put a red cross on the side of them, you know, and got through. So they wouldn't sink those. But they decide what to do with them. You think they're unmarked?
So,
why did they do a lot of things, you know?
They're strange people.
They are.
Yeah. So, Ben, how long were you in Japan?
I was
here.
In
Japan? Oh, you were there, yeah.
I got there the first part of September, and we worked in coal mine. We go 12 hours. Everything.
You grew up in Roundup. Did you have any mining experience at all there?
No. No, I never been in one. I've been to, used to haul coal out of that 30-mile mine, but I never went back in. And my grandfather really started Roundup. He was a mining engineer for the Milwaukee.
Oh, really?
This was an old mine that they kind of reactivated just to for us guys to work in.
Oh, it hadn't been worked before you guys got there?
I don't think so. They just reopened it. But you wouldn't believe that place. It was 3 miles underground. From the opening of the mine to the coal station was 3 miles. If you can imagine that.
We'd go down
in a cable car because it was on the slope. And we get off on various levels and then walk back through these tunnels to the coal station.
What were you mining then?
Coal. That was slack coal.
And what were they doing with it?
I heard they were making oil out of it or something. We had a quick earthquake down the mine, didn't we?
You had an earthquake?
Earthquake, yeah. Everything just got black all of a sudden, and we couldn't see with the lights or anything, because we had lights on our hats, you know. And we had kind of wet cell battery we wore on our belt, on our back. And then, of course, went up to the light. They were pretty good lights, didn't they? But they used to leak acid once in a while, and they used to hold a seat out of their pants. A lot of the guys didn't have any seat in their pants. Remember, one guy turned his pants brown. God, you'd be walking down their butts showing all over the place. You
know, the
seat in
their
pants.
Were they all Americans down there?
No, they were British. Half of them.
Oh, British too.
British that were captured in Singapore. Yeah, over the Malay Peninsula. So half of the camp was British. And they were there when we arrived.
Working already?
Yeah, they've been there years.
What was that like? Cold?
Well, it was cold outside because it used to snow in Japan, you know. And we had these little kind of a tennis shoes. You know. Your big toes fit in one, and then they had separate ones for your other four toes. Cooksies, we call them, kind of tennis, canvas shoes. So we issued a pair of those when we got there, and I was still wearing what remained of it. And we used to walk through the snow, you know.
At your exhibit in Lewistown, there's a photograph of you with some kind of an identification badge or something. That was issued in camp?
Yeah.
What was the purpose of that?
I don't know.
But to keep track of?
They issued us those coats that we had on. So they were exactly new, you know. And that they took a picture in there. There were four of us abreast, you know.
Now they didn't do any identification of prisoners in the Philippines, right? Or not like that.
Well, just your name.
But now you were...
We didn't have a photograph.
And did they do that because you were now in Japan? They wanted to keep track of enemy? Mm-hmm. Like that?
Anyway, after the war ended, we went into the offices and took those pictures out of the file.
Tell me about that, when you say after the war ended.
Well, after the surrender, they left the camp, so we went and took those.
Is that how you knew that the war was over?
No. Well, the commander told us it was over, but the planes came over and dropped the fleet.
What was that like? At that moment,
it was unbelievable. It's better to think that you were free again. We didn't really believe it all until the planes came over B-29s and dropped the fleet and told us to surrender, and it was even after the troops, after the occupation troops came in. So we were delighted.
What did the Japanese do?
They left. They just opened the door and left. We were strictly on our own. We went around the village and everything else, walked around. The Japanese were all afraid of us, we'd come out of the gates while they'd all run. So we finally got where we made friends with them, talked to them, especially the kids. So then we had to put a big PW outside the camp so they could identify it from the air, and then they dropped his food. Tons of food.
How soon after?
Oh, just a few days.
Huh?
B-29 came over and dropped his barrel of food.
How did they know there were prisoners in that part?
They seemed to know. I don't know whether they got it from the Japanese or what, but they seemed to know where we were.
I think they got it in the Japanese files. I can't think which book it was, but because they had files on all the camps.
Yeah.
Well, for instance, the hospitals where the POWs were, they had files on all that.
Do you think that was one of the conditions of surrender? That the Japanese had
They realized that where all the guys were.
How were you then rescued from the camp?
Well, we stayed in there for a month after the war ended.
On your own?
Yeah.
Nobody came to assist?
No
doctors?
No. But they dropped us food and medicine because we were living. Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Lots of cigarettes now. Camp looked like it was on fire. All the guys smoking in
there. There were camps.
Which I thought of, right on that. Fluffies and the old golden and camels and thousands of them, you know. They initially sell us 5 or 6 cartons of cigarettes, you know. And we smoked day and night. And then they dropped food in barrels. They welded barrels of 50-gallon drums together and tied it to parachutes. And they just kind of dropped them like it.
Yeah. And you're in kind of a mountain region?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very big village.
And how were you transported out of the camp?
Well, we stayed there until about 15th of September, and the Japanese came and took us out by train. Yeah, they moved us all over the train. We took us off to Wakayama, Japan, where they had a processing station.
And were these civilian Japanese, or military Japanese? And no, they weren't armed,
no
guns, nothing like that.
So you weren't concerned when you left with them?
Oh, were they now bowing to you? Very respectful?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they were bowing to us, and more than that, we had to bow to them all the time, you know. Every time you met a guard or something, you had to bow to the white. And you had to do it right.
Ben, when you were in Japan, I know that when you were in Philippines, if you escaped, they would kill the other.
Yeah, they put us in squad. That was in the Philippines.
And
I don't think they have the Japan.
That's what I was going to ask, if they have that same.
I don't know if they did. Of course, nobody escaped when they place you go in Japan, you know, you're too obvious.
Well, I guess that's true, isn't it?
Yeah, you stick out like a sore thumb, you know.
Yeah.
But in the Philippines, they had us in squad. One man escaped, they'd shoot the other 9. That happened.
Now, I talked to you before about the bombing of Hiroshima. So, how far away was your camp?
We were 70 miles from Hiroshima.
Were you
close enough to get the rumble from it and were in the mountains, so we didn't see the mushroom, so we weren't looking for it, you know. But it wrecked the building. Yeah.
Did you know it was different than the earthquake?
It was different than an earthquake?
Yeah.
Oh, we really didn't know what it was.
Right.
But smoke and ashes came in. We were quite heavy. And radioactivity, I suppose. But after, when they took us out of there, we went right to Hiroshima.
Well,
the railroad went right through the middle of the place.
What was that like?
Well, it was just nothing there. Twisted metal and pieces of stunted trees. The mountain was scorched all the way up, halfway up the mountain. For a mile around it. Now, it was into the map.
How long after the bomb had dropped? 2 months or 1 month after?
So they'd rebuilt the railroad. And we went out to Wakayama, which is a town on Kamehameha Street, Japan. And they had a station, 7 ports. And that hot metal ship came in and picked us up to USS Constellation. A beautiful ship. So they went in there, like Red Cross girls and everything, issuing the floats, bags and stuff. And we were just all eyeballs, you know, just by asking with the Scottish. And they made us take all our clothes off when they went in this place and they'd be lousy. We were all lousy, you know, but body lice and all that. And then they made us shower for 20 minutes with medicated soap, and they sprayed us as we came out, you know, from one end to the other, and issued us food and put us on the ship. And it was gorgeous. White sheets, you know? My God. I didn't sleep all night. I'd say go to sleep and I'd miss it all.
Well, you wake up and just be dreaming.
Yeah, right.
You said that there were Red Cross parcels?
That was, yeah, in the Philippines. And then, we got one in Japan and one in Philippines.
You told me stories.
We were one of those every week, you know. They did in Germany. They had lots of Red Cross.
Well, the Japanese kept them. But they got through it.
They kept them, too. They're getting cigarettes out of them.
They found that out of the Commander One, I guess.
Oh, yeah. That's during that Great Raid movie, they had that party.
They found out
that. The Red Cross party.
Well, the Japanese moved out at once. They were just moving all over the island because we were coming in. And they left completely for a while. Then others came in. So at that time when they left, the men broke into the supply and it was based on somebody's account. Then
Grant used to tell about that in QP.
The Red Cross boxes that they held back, they were using.
Oh, they found canned milk in there and all that sort of stuff.
And
did you continue to draw then when you were in Japan?
I did 2 drawings in Japan that's in the exhibit. Because I was working all the time in Japan.
Yeah.
And then my book was 2 drawings at the end of the book were drawn in Japan. One you can see that when it was on a form sheet.
The line paper, yeah. And those were done in Japan.
One was heat and tea in the wintertime. Another was load of rock. And I don't do any trick in there. I didn't do any command one. So I didn't have time at work on that.
Did the drawing help you?
They saved my life, really. They helped me a lot, kind of helped me to readjust and everything else. Because I kind of expelled my emotions through those things. And in the Philippines, you know, I spent a lot of time and passed a lot of hours drawing.
Yeah.
And from meal to meal, you know. Countless hours, you know. only thing, I'd run out of pencils. I'd never sharpen a pencil, I just take the wood away from it. So I used all the lead.
Where'd you get the pencils?
Well, a Japanese gave me some. And then, of course, guys got parcels from home and they sent pencils and they used to give me pencils. They didn't have to use one, but they were writing Benji or something. We used to write Benji, you know.
What do you mean?
Oh, yeah, all different kinds of things.
Oh, did you really?
Huh?
Yeah,
oh,
you
yeah.
really did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we used to write Benji.
Oh, I suppose anything...
All kinds of different mixtures of stuff.
Anything to pass the time, huh?
Oh, yeah. Hey, was that also a form of humor?
Yeah.
Kind of lightness, severity of the circumstance?
Yeah. Well, then we exchange Benji, you know. Ridiculous stuff, you know.
What was that recipe? Was that you or somebody? Some kind of pie?
A Milky Way pie.
Milky Way pie.
Milky pie out of Milky Way candy bucket. Oh, my God. Yeah. We were hungry all the time, you know, and our minds were on food.
What you would take in on a camping trip, you would have to have a train.
Well, I wrote a hunting trip. I was going to go on to all the food that's going to take on this hunting trip. It had to have the Northern Pacific Railroad. Now, if you can think of one thing that's not on there, I'll give you $1 for it. So I'll give types of flowers. Yeah, see things, you know. That's ridiculous stuff. I still got that somewhere.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. Don't I?
Yeah.
Well, it's been more something like that. It's a little older, so. And yeah, honey trip was in New York. All different kinds of beans. Macaroni. All different types of cheese. It's ridiculous stuff.
So tell me about coming back on the ship and once you were picked up.
Oh, after we picked up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was my first day they put us on the ship. By the my first morning through breakfast line, I went through three times. And I couldn't eat till after. So I made a sandwich out of eggs and bacon and put it in a napkin and put it under my pillow. And the doctor came by and said, "You got any pillow that night?" It was part of my breakfast. I couldn't eat that. After a while, he says, "You know, you get grease all over the sheets," and he says, "We're going to beat you for an hour." So you don't have to worry about that. So I'm not taking any chances. And we were just used to doing it that way. And I faded it later on. Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
So many people didn't come back. Why do you think you came back and made it always different?
Well, you know, survival depended on so many different things. I mean, where you're standing here is good over here. And, whether you contacted diseases right off the start. Yeah, I didn't get malaria until I've been there for a while. Guys that contacted malaria on baton, that's what they were doing. And, I'm not any tougher while the rest of them didn't have all my day. I'm not just luck. I don't know how to explain it. You know, you get kind of a guilty feeling for coming home, you know. Yet so many didn't, but I was, you know, I was busy. Tougher guys than me buried over there. I just thought I was lucky. I'm a very lucky guy, really.
Well, you were healthy, too.
Well, I was very healthy, of course.
You were raised outdoors. You know, and lived outdoors a lot.
One thing, I knew how to take care of myself and the elements better. You know, the guys that's never face the outdoors and the elements and they're able to get up on them like that road. kind of how to do that. I mean, I made little shelters for myself. I improvised a lot. And that had a lot to do with it.
Were there a lot of examples of people who didn't make it because they gave up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of guys did. They said it was just so they killed themselves.
Yes, they could. You told me before that there was a common expression about that. Remember what that was? Death is as light as a feather.
Oh, yeah.
How is that?
Duty is heavy as a mountain. Yeah, death is pretty easy if it comes right down to it. You can end your life pretty fast. And you really have to suffer it for it.
So tell me a little bit about when you got back to the States. When you came on, did you come to Hawaii and then to
the States? I went to Letterman Hospital. And they took us on the ship to Okinawa, and then they flew us from Okinawa back to the States. So I was back in the States before my folks even let me read.
Through to San Francisco?
Just sent through Letterman Hospital in San Francisco.
Yeah, but you flew into San Francisco.
I stayed there about a week in Letterman, and they gave us our first physical in Guam, with Dr. Guam. We stayed there for days, and that's where I met Beryl the first time. Beryl was in the room next to me, and he said, has anybody seen Ben Steele? He said, well, he's in the other room.
Uh-oh.
And that's what we do, we survived it, you know. And so then we got together, we kept track of each other's memories. And we flew back to the States on the same plane. Back to Letterman. Went to Waterloo. And from Letterman, they put us in hospitals closest to our home. So I went to Spokane, Washington. Baxter Hospital. I was attached for a year. And they gave a thorough examination, fixed her teeth, and all that sort of thing. We had psychiatrists. Because we were all about half-nudged.
During that time, did your family come to you?
Yeah. Well, mother came out there, because they didn't let me go home until about the middle of November.
And did,
45.
And did the government transport your mother, or did they make every girl for herself? She had to figure that out herself, pay for that herself?
Yeah, this car came to Portland to see me, and before mother did, because I used to work for her. And then mother came out, and then I went home in the middle of November, time for Thanksgiving, 45.
Did your parents know if you were alive, or were there...
Well, I sent little cards out, and I was missing for about a year and a half, or maybe not quite that long. But anyway, and Bliss came out of UW, and mother got a telegram that I was at UW. Then we used to send little cards out, which is on my... black down there, and saying that I'm well and being treated well.
Yeah.
Regards to the family, that's about it. You probably, your dad sent some of those.
He did.
And did your mother have some of those?
I don't know if my mother has them, but because my mother and my dad weren't married, they didn't even know each other at that time.
Uh-huh.
So he sent some to his mother.
Oh.
And she got some, and I think my dad's brother had one or two. So they get
all
of
mine.
That's neat that you have all of yours.
Yeah. Well, I'd come home for a couple of weeks, then I'd go back to the hospital and come over to the back hospital. I got malaria a couple times after I got home.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. But I didn't get back to the hospital. Yeah, I didn't have it all the time I was in Japan, which was a godsend, really.
Hmm.
But I had it home.
Faith in your system.
Yeah, could you still get that now?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't have it. I haven't tested positive since I've been back to hospital.
Okay.
But every time he gets an infection of the flu or anything like this, whatever deal he had with Holly. He just is so cold and shaky, any kind of fever. And my grandfather was the same way. He had a fever.
You chill, but yeah. Nothing like when you got malaria.
I know, but still you chill.
Malaria chills. You vibrate the height. Mm-hmm. Oh, did Dad ever have one?
Yeah.
Did he have to have malaria?
I don't know if he did or not. I don't
know. All of us had malaria.
Yeah.
I don't know one guy that didn't have malaria. That was a malaria-infested peninsula on the Yukon. You're lucky enough not to get it before the march, right? It helped a lot. You know, I didn't get it until I got to it now. I had it on this road. I had it going into the country. And I was 102, 103 feet or more probably when I was working on the road.
Did you volunteer for that? Yeah. Were you? Yes? Because you thought it would be better than what
I thought it would be better than O'Donnell. It was probably the worst detail there was about. But I tried to look good. And
how long was that?
3 months. That's probably that.
Did the prisoners ever fight among themselves because of his desperate?
We used to get into senseless fights when we couldn't hurt each other. We're strong enough. I've never fight down to mine. Because we were so irritable, you know. And we hit each other once in a while. And we back off.
Ben, you told us a story about a Red Cross
package
that you got.
Well, this is in Japan.
I got it stolen.
Yes. That story.
Oh yeah, I went down the mine and I hid my Red Cross parcel in underneath my bunk. When I came back, it was gone. So I knew this one guy, and he came out and said, "I'm sorry you lost your Red Cross parcel." The guy's name was Red Lion. I said, "That's the guy." And so then my friend Keenan, he lost his too, and I said, "I think I know he might have taken it." So we just went in and searched his friends, and we found him, because we marched all our camps. And we need to help. No, we got killed. So he was pleading for his life. And after we came home, just the damnedest thing to be in Shirley's hometown.
Where he was teaching.
Where I was teaching. This guy came in, a prisoner of war, and was going to tell how Red Cross helped POW. And it was this guy that stole my parcel.
He worked for the Red Cross, I guess.
I guess he did.
Yeah.
Anyway, I let him go through his speech, then I went up and talked to him. And sort of, don't I know you?
Oh.
If you don't, you sure as hell should, you know.
Oh, man.
And he just turned like a bulb, you know, and he realized who I was. Just the sweetest drop.
Yeah.
He suffered enough after that, you know.
Oh,
he went on and on how the Red Cross helped field every type of
some more than others.
You know, what goes around comes around sometimes.
Yep.
But I couldn't believe it, you know.
What are the chances of running back? What are the chances of running into him?
Well, I know. It's like winning the lottery or something.
Yeah. He came out of Cleveland. I wonder if he was from Cleveland.
He was from Cleveland. I met him in Cleveland one day. We got talked a little bit, you know, and I never brought the thing up. Because I could tell he didn't remember that I had.
So how did you get to art school? Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, this is Father Duffy, who lived in Shirley's hometown.
Which is where?
New London, Ohio.
He was interested in my drawings, and he was going to do a book, and I was going to illustrate it. And so he had me come back there, and I lived with him, too. And the Barrys, these guys, went up to the art school in Cleveland Institute of Art, and took my drawings up there, and this was late August, and they'd already formed the classes, you know, for the freshman year. And I told them I wanted to get in, and I showed them my drawings, and they made room. Said, we're going to make room for you. I got in that, because they only took 125 freshmen this year, out of a couple thousand.
Very few people got it.
And,
So you're 126.
In my flip there. So I went 4 years.
For a diploma. Now they give a degree. But you had to go another year to a university for a bachelor's.
Then I was married, you know, of course. I married in February 46. When I was still attached to the hospital, which was a fiasco.
Oh, you got married while you were still in the hospital?
Yeah. I was still attached. And I had the two girls, you know, in 47, 46, and 47. And so I went back and I bought a house in her hometown. I used to commute to Clinton every day, 60 miles. Wow. One way. Because you couldn't find places to live.
Oh, there were no houses. They hadn't.
And I was in with a couple other guys that worked at Clinton. We used to trade off.
Everything was geared to the war.
So I went to the divorce during my
civilian needs.
Art school days. I went through all that drama too.
Yeah.
And divorced in 49.
Bobby couldn't see what he was trying to do, I guess.
So that was a triumph.
When he was working in the summer for a decorator.
Well, I could have got more out of the art school if I hadn't been for all that.
But then when he go back to school, well, they all called her mother and Bob did, but she was, he was lazy, you know, he didn't want to work.
So when you graduated from the Cleveland Art Institute, then what did you
do? Well, I went by enrolled in Kent State and Michigan. Because I need some academics, you know, because you don't get them in the art school. So I went to Cleveland to Kent State where I have a degree. Went to get a diploma for 4 years in Cleveland. And I went a year to Kent State and got a BSc. And certified in Ohio to teach and all that sort of thing. Because I was thinking of making a living, you know. And from there I went to the University of Denver and got an
M. In the summer.
Now, you told me you taught in New London, Ohio.
Yeah.
Tell us about that. When was that?
That was in, when I got out of Kent State. Mm-hmm. I took a job teaching art and coaching football.
You coached the second team,
the
team.
That's an unusual combination, don't you think?
Yeah, it is an unusual combination.
And were you successful?
Very successful. I haven't lost a game. I never lost one game, did I?
No. And then you won the
I had a lot of horses, though, you know.
And
I had some college boys on there, so all you have to do is give them the ball.
Yeah. You never played basketball.
And what? You never played basketball.
I played football in high school. But I never played basketball. And then they gave me the job to teach the basketball, and I said, oh, I don't know anything about basketball. And I didn't lose any games in basketball.
So you won two
championships.
Seriously?
Yeah.
The art teacher.
Yeah, right. Well, and they won. They had him in an annex because the school was going to the war.
It was incredible.
And they came in as freshmen from all the smaller towns.
Yeah.
And any problem kid, they put him in the art class.
Yeah.
And he could handle. And Mr. Good, the principal,
D. Good,
I guess it was, the superintendent, I guess it was, it didn't do any good to send these kids to him. You know, he just really did. So Ben was some folks that had to get him. Oh, they had the Baptist preacher son, who was a real character.
Oh, Lowy.
Lowy. And then, Herber and some of those others, they had a club, they called themselves the Men.
Yeah.